So you're outsourcing your production to a manufacturer in Asia, and everything's going well. You're getting the product shipped over in the containers, they're on the market, they're selling, everybody's happy. That is, until they're not. And imagine you start getting product returns and complaints from customers. So you're looking into this. Well, how can this be? I thought the manufacturer was doing a fine job and everything seemed to have been okay. So then you test the product. Well, it seems that perhaps some of the components aren't what you expected. Maybe the materials seem to be cheaper than you would have expected. Maybe some corners have been cut. You could be a victim of quality fade. So Renaud's going to go into what is quality fade in a bit more detail, and he's going to talk about why this is definitely not something that you want to be suffering from. And importantly, he's going to give you some of the tools you need to maintain the integrity of your products, to maintain that quality, and to make sure that the suppliers are holding up their end of the bargain. You're listening to China Manufacturing Decoded from the Sophie's Group. Hello, this is episode 212. Adrian hosting today. Renaud joins me. Hello, Renaud.
Hi there. Hey, hi Adrian. Hey everybody. So, what is the great topic of today?
Well, a great topic indeed, and that is quality fade. And I was doing some research because if you go back over 200 episodes, however many hundreds of hours of manufacturing topics, we've kind of touched on pretty much everything in different ways. But quality fade is not something we've particularly spoken about that much. So what I was hoping to do today was to get, an idea into what is this concept from you and how is it likely to affect the listener? So if you're, let's say you're listening from the States or from France, the UK, whatever, and you are manufacturing in Asia, is this something you need to be worried about? And if it is an issue, how do we sort of avoid it?
Right, all right. So for people who've been buying from China, buying products from China for some time, they've probably heard that term quality fade. And some people say, oh, this is typically Chinese. That will happen when you have a suppliers playing a game, and that's one of the games that will really hurt you because you don't see it coming, you know. And then they have sort of rule of thumb of like, you get to watch shipment number three or number four or number five. That's where it really starts to get off the rails and things like that. Okay. So first, who wrote about that first? The first one who wrote about that, I think, is an American guy, is the same person who wrote Made in China. Sorry, Poorly Made in China, the book. In what 2008, 2009, that book came out. So, oh yeah, Paul Midler, right? Paul Midler, who is a Chinese speaker, American, lived in Guangzhou for years and in Taiwan for years and so on. Okay, a nice, smart guy, good writer, very good writer, good analyst, definitely experienced in working with Chinese manufacturers. And in 2007, I got this article still open. So it was published in 2007 on the sort of a blog on the Wharton School, I think it's the School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. And he explained, okay, why. Because that time, let's rewind the clock a little bit, 2006, 2007, a lot of things made the headlines for the wrong reasons, right? The Mattel toys that had paint based on lead and things like that. And then a number of things like that came up. Okay. And people were wondering what's going on? Is it like a structural issue with China? Is it just the way companies are managing their Chinese supply chain? What's going on here? And he came up and he said, look, there's a phenomenon. And he called it quality fade because quality basically sort of fades away. That's the idea, right, behind the term. It fades away. You have manufacturing batch number one, number two, number three, number four, and sort of it fades away. The way he calls it, there's a proper quote here. Yeah, the deliberate and secretive habit of widening profit margins through a reduction in the quality of materials. All right. So what that means is you find a supplier, I don't know, of I don't know, steel bars, let's say. Okay. And then you give, you give them the specs, or maybe they have something on their catalog and say, okay, I buy this. And you kind of negotiate a price and you say, okay, all right, I'm gonna buy it at $5.40 FOB. Okay. And then they make it the first time, they know that you're going to be watching carefully, right? And then they know they have to pay attention. Okay, like if it's bad, like we're not gonna have a repeat order or something. You know, there's things are gonna go bad because they're gonna look at it. Okay, so they do it according to the specs, and maybe they just do a very small margin on that. Okay, then the second time they start to wonder. Okay, the first time it went all right, so maybe we overshot the real standard that is acceptable, that is okay, right? Maybe we're actually spending too much on this product, and maybe they don't need it to be that good, right? But we cannot ask them because otherwise they would just say, "Hey, this is the spec. You quoted based on the spec. What are you doing here, right? Why are we even having this conversation? The quality standard is the quality standard. It is sacred. You can't like negotiate it away. You know, that's it, right?" So they know that it's a non-starter. They cannot go into this kind of discussion, so they don't discuss it, right? That's why Miller says it is secretive. It is a secretive habit. Okay, but it's deliberate. It's planned, right? That's what he observed, and some others observed it. So you know, there's some truth here, definitely. And then the second time, they start to maybe make it slightly lighter, you know, or whatever, or maybe, yeah, let's say, make it slightly smaller or something, or maybe start to play a little bit, maybe you know, with the steel grade, the grade of steel, maybe, I don't know, don't do the heat treatment fully or something like that. And then the third time they do the same, and the fourth time they do the same. You know, every time they're like, okay, we didn't get any feedback, we probably overshot what you know, the bottom line, that where they really push back and say, hey, this is not acceptable. What is it, right? Because let's be smart. Let's investigate that, right? It's kind of, in a way, it is rational. It's definitely not great business. It's not long-term thinking, right? Because the proper way would be to say, hey guys, you gave us some specs, but what exactly, you know, maybe give us the tensile strength that you need and things like that, and then we'll make the part that will match that tensile strength, for example. Okay. Or whatever. Let's try to really understand what is the value of the part and do you need it like this and so on, right? But no. They know that these kind of conversations will be difficult. Maybe the foreign party, the foreign buyer will not even, you know, entertain it. Maybe they're just, in many cases, it's not even possible to have this conversation because they're just in contact with some kind of purchasing agent who has no clue and, you know, would just push back and say, no, look, guys, you have the specs and that's it. You know, don't waste my time. I don't even know what to tell you, right? So they do it in a deliberate and secretive manner. Does it happen? Yeah. You know, but does it happen as often now as in 2007? Maybe yes, maybe no. Actually, it's kind of hard to tell. My gut would say probably less so. Until maybe some people might actually say it's, you know, the risk is higher now that a lot of manufacturers in China are really feeling the pain of the slowdown, and maybe they are sort of on the brink of bankruptcy, and they owe a lot of a lot of money to their suppliers, and they have
Mm.
trouble paying the salary of their staff and so on. So maybe some people, you know, would say that it's more likely now. Frankly, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. However, is this the number one reason of quality issues of products coming out of China? I would pretty confidently say no. So it is a phenomenon to look at, right? But it's not something that every supplier does. It doesn't happen in every situation. It's more or less likely to happen, let's say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think, listeners who outsource production, this is the kind of nightmare that people lose sleep over when they're dealing with, let's say a Chinese manufacturer, although maybe it's not fair to make it specifically about China, because I'm pretty sure that quality fade could occur anywhere, because it's not a unique China issue. But if we are using, a Chinese manufacturer as an example, that's okay. I think your point about, the economic pressures that manufacturers are under in China at the moment, because the Chinese economy has been, well, beset by the similar kinds of issues that are being exhibited in certain areas in the West, or most of the West, that probably is some truth in that. I would, from my own observations, I think manufacturing in China was probably kind of a lot less developed in 2007 than it is now. Because China, the UK in 2007, for example, compared to the UK today, not very different. But China in 07 compared to 2024, it's almost like a different country two or three times over, So things develop very quickly. So maybe manufacturers are just kind of more professional now, and it is less likely to happen. But yeah, economic aspects might cause it. Now we understand what quality fade is, right? And yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a danger that you want to avoid, because as a somebody that is importing products and getting your products made, you want consistent products. You perhaps are banking on them being consistent because your distributors are saying, well, you're supplying us with products that are safe because the batch that you've given us, they've passed all the certifications and whatever. And if you're keeping supplying those products, but actually they're not the same, then essentially you're putting in non-compliant products
Of
into a
course.
market, which could manifest in all sorts of issues, not least the chance of prison, I suppose, in really bad cases. So are there any ways that we can avoid quality fade? What should we be doing?
So first you get to identify, is this a situation likely to occur or not, right? I would not say that it's likely to occur in every situation. And I would say if first question is, do you buy standard off-the-shelf products or let's say lightly customized? Like for example, in Port Midler's article, on that blog that I mentioned, he took the example of steel bars or steel parts, structural parts for construction. Okay. And he said, well, over time, you know, the parts weighed, what, 10% less, I think.
Wow, okay.
Which is a big problem because, you know, structural steel in construction is really supposed to have a certain strength and so on. And that could lead to maybe the collapse of a building or something like that.
Yeah.
That's really bad, right? And yeah, Chinese suppliers, maybe they don't even know what it's used for. Now that's, again, that's on the buyer. Sorry, right? The buyer should tell them, you know, what it is for. And in any case, obviously, if they don't match the specs willingly, that's really a big problem anyway. But if it's relatively, you know, a product with a lot of engineering content, let's say, you know, it becomes less likely, right? I will we'll touch on that maybe later. But the mo but okay, let's say if it's a standard off-the-shelf product, you really have to first look at what kind of supplier are we dealing with? What kind of, what's the sort of mindset of the factory, owner, right? And is there a trading company in the middle? How are they managing that, right? But if let's say it's a direct factory relationship, what's the sort of the normal modus operandi over there? And usually, if you work with a factory that doesn't really invest in good equipment, that in general doesn't really think long term, doesn't do training programs of the staff and things like that, doesn't even try to keep a lot of full-time employees stable, you're dealing with a company that really acts in a very short-term manner. And there was more of that, maybe much more of that in 2007 than now. Okay. Because at that time, it was easy times, let's say in the 2000s, in especially in certain sectors, the growth was just tremendous. And the people just get, peasants started to put things together and they got really rich and they didn't care. They didn't, and there's still some of that today, right? Where a lot of factory owners don't want their kids to work in manufacturing. They say, it's kind of dirty and it's like nonstop problems and so on. I'm working hard to get the family some wealth so that the kids don't have to worry with that. They would just manage the real estate property and what are some easy business with, recurring revenue and that's it. They don't have to work hard. They don't have to be involved with dirty stuff and face maybe aggressive suppliers and aggressive customers and always try to fight to preserve the margin and all that stuff, right? And so when you don't plan to actually keep the company alive for a long time, well, you don't really plan for the future much, right? You just take all the cash you can, and especially with a booming real estate market, or at the time it was a booming stock market, also the Shanghai stock market, 2007, I remember. Even the operators on the lines were talking about it. I mean, that was just nuts. Lately, the performance hasn't been great, so it's, yeah, they're not doing that. But there was a lot of that in 2007, sort of the go-go days, right? That phenomenon is not as strong these days, right? So, yeah. So the very first thing is, who are you dealing with, right? If you're dealing with one of these very short-term oriented factory management, yeah, that might happen. That might happen, of course. Now, that's the first thing. And the second thing is, well, if it happens, are you going to catch it? Right? Do you have some kind of reasonable testing plan that will that will test or measure or somehow review and verify or validate the key quality characteristics, safety characteristics of the product, right? The key performance characteristics. Maybe you don't need to test them fully. Maybe you don't need to test them every batch, but you get to have some kind of way to confirm that it's all right. So you buy, I don't know, you buy toys and you have painted, I don't know, painted figurines. Well, from time to time, you get to get that the paint tested. Just like you get to have the plastic tested. You don't want BPA or phthalates and such nasty substances in your plastic. And you
No.
don't want lead and you don't want whatever, depending on the colors, various types of of prohibited or let's say restricted substances, right? You don't want nickel and these kinds of heavy metals, right? In the paint. So because kids will put it into their mouth and it's really, really bad, right? If later somebody finds out, or even if they don't find out, it's bad anyway. So you from time to time, and that's what importers, a lot of importers are doing. If they buy, let's say, I don't know, six production batches per year, well, maybe two times or three times they will test for certain things, right? And the supplier doesn't know. The supplier is kept on their toes. Maybe they don't even know that it's tested, right? But the buyer tells them, yeah, we're going to test it, but you don't know. You will not know when we tested. You will not see the pattern.
Yeah, well, you've said this before. Like, even if you're working with regular suppliers, like if let's say you're sourcing a new supplier and you're unfamiliar with them and they're producing a product that they are at the moment unfamiliar with, of course, more oversight in the short term is going to be helpful. But even for trusted suppliers who you've, purchased a number of batches from, as you've said before, checking in on them from time to time absolutely makes sense, just for the reasons that you've outlined, and just in case quality fade is an issue that has, been under the radar. So yeah, that makes sense.
And obviously something very important. I'm coming back to Paul Miller's article. And that's also something that he mentioned in his book, Poorly Made in China, is that he says that there are cases where smart, savvy suppliers will play games and circumvent the testing. And this happens when you let the supplier decide which samples they will pick. Okay. And also sometimes they also left to decide which lab they will send to. And maybe they sometimes, and that's the example here that he mentions. Sometimes the buyer will say, hey, Mr. Supplier, you need to show me a past report about that. I don't want to know anything. Like you pay for it, you manage it and everything. That sounds reasonable. Okay, but if in that case, this what the supplier did, according to this article again, the supplier sent 10 different samples, and then some of the 9 of the samples failed and one passed. And because there's some variety, they don't even produce in a consistent manner. But most of the production is not compliant, but sometimes by luck, whatever, the way they made it, the way the materials that were put in, also the testing system in the labs sometimes is not perfectly repeatable and reproducible, right? So sometimes you get, oh, you got one passed. And then what happens then is that you just pick that report and you send it to the customer. So, in my mind, that's a really, really bad process just for on the buyer's side.
You gave the example of the steel, which is a really good one because we don't want buildings collapsing, right? But I suppose to be more informed about quality fade, can you give some more examples of the sorts of ways that we can see quality fade happening? In like for different types of products, steel's one, but maybe in, plastics and maybe in garments and whatever else. Are there any examples that you can mention?
Well, sure. A lot of the time it will be on the type of materials that are used. They will not buy. So it could be at the supplier side or, your direct supplier or some of their sub-suppliers, right? And maybe your direct supplier doesn't even know that quality fade phenomenon might be at the sub-supplier level. So it could be slightly different materials. So if you say, I don't know, garments, then a certain kind of microfiber, maybe instead of nylon, polyamide, they might send you polyester or something like that. But the hand feel might be nearly the same, right? Or the finishing maybe might not be done properly, or and then you're gonna have some issues about what do they call it, crocking, or what's the color fastness, yeah, meaning that the water might the color might sort of bleed onto anything else that it touches, right? These are just some examples. Or
Sure.
typically for garment, the most typical actually would be that they cut smaller. They cut everything a little bit smaller, so everything is like half a size smaller on average. That happens more often than the opposite. I don't know why. So that effect of quality fade in sectors where in product categories where there's a lot of price competition, a lot of pressure on price is more common. So, cheap footwear, cheap garments, yeah, that it happens. It happens. I should have mentioned that. That's sort of an obvious one. Those where there's more margin, typically, it makes sense, right? The supplier is more long-term focused and plays fewer games of that nature, right? So if it's anything that's with surface treatments, like some kind of paint, coat, maybe electroplating and things like that. Well, electroplating, you can cheapen electroplating. You just put, fewer solids in the bath, right? And you keep it a little bit less time in the bath, for example, and things like that, right? You put less solids in the bath. It might not be visible right away, but what happens maybe is that a few months down the road, well, it's no longer resistant to human sweat, or the abrasion just removes the layer of plating very fast, right? And then people really complain because the product suddenly looks like a really old product that's ready to be thrown away.
But of course, unless it was tested, when you physically look at the new product, you're never going to know, probably.
Right. If you just look at the product at the end of production, you might not see the difference because the exact it might be the exact same color, right? But and if you don't do what we always preach, ongoing reliability testing, maybe not on every production batch, but again, same as what I mentioned before, maybe two or three batches every year or something like that. Well, ongoing reliability testing might catch it. Again, if you target the right kind of tests, right, based on the right kind of risks, it should proceed from a risk analysis. But yeah, definitely, if you do some kind of abrasion testing, then you would see, or some special, I don't know, some special environmental testing and things like that, you might see that the plating just doesn't hold up. Is not the one that was approved in the first production batch, maybe. Yeah, we could go on and on and on. I mean, there's so many examples.
I just wanted to ask a question about the ongoing reliability testing or any kind of ongoing testing, right? If you're going to put in place a test plan that includes ongoing testing after something's already in production, maybe it's been in production for some time, would you say it's better to tell the manufacturer that you're going to do this so they know, or would you say it's better to sort of do it on drop in unannounced? For like a spot check and take them by surprise. Presumably, there's benefits to doing both ways.
That's right. That's right. So again, it comes back to, is it a standard of the shelf product? And usually there's, how to say, well, it depends. If it's again for like structural parts for construction, for example, it's safety, there's certain safety critical parameters and you're gonna have to test them. And they should be very clear to the supplier. I mean, you're not going to hide to the supplier what the safety critical characteristics of the product or the part are, right? It's
No.
just done. They should know because they should also plan for ensuring that they can meet these the target values on these characteristics, right? And then you're going to tell them that you test them, and you're going to tell them exactly how you test them so they can also replicate it so you are aligned, right? So now some of the tests might be expensive, might take time and so on. I'm thinking, yeah, typically chemical analysis testing for some products sold in the European Union. There's just so many things, between REACH and POP and ROS for anything that's electrical or electronic, and maybe food contact materials for anything that touches beverages and food. And then when people buy, especially the buyers of decoration and gift and premium and so on, I don't know how they do. I mean, they have so many items, so many SKUs, and in different colors and so on. They cannot test everyone every time. But if they buy repeatedly, they need again to have a reasonable testing plan that will allow them, let's say, over a period of 1 year to say, yeah, we've tested every single SKU, every single color, based on this plan, right? Maybe not for everything, but for a little bit of this, a little bit of that, so on, to reduce the risks, right? So you should tell them what you're going to test and how you're going to test it, but you don't need to tell them, oh, we're going to test this and nothing else on this batch, right? You want them to assume that you will be testing all the time, basically. Okay. Now, if it's a new product, highly customized with a lot of engineering content, you should be working with a manufacturer that has technical ability to actually orient guide you in the right direction and provide some technical support to get things right. And if it's the right kind of supplier, maybe they can do some of the ongoing reliability testing themselves, and that's it. And then maybe once in a while, of course, you can take a few samples and get them tested, maybe for the exact same thing, the exact same way, exact same method, in a reliability test lab that you choose, right? But I'm thinking about it at Agilian. Any of our clients, yeah, do they arrange some testing on their side without our cooperation? Yeah, probably happened a few times. Fortunately, never blew up in our faces, right?
Well, yeah, because we are sticking to their quality standard and their
Yeah, we're not
demands.
playing games, but it's healthy anyway for the buyer side from time to time to do a sanity
Well, it's
check,
about
right?
control, isn't it?
Yeah,
Control and
exactly.
oversight.
Yeah, but most of the testing is organized by us usually, or with us in the loop, right? And there's no problem. But so it comes back to what kind of supplier you're working with, what kind of supplier, right? If you're working with a short-term minded supplier, buying a product that's standard off the shelf or lightly customized, they don't really care much about you. Yeah, the risk is higher, of course.
And that comes down to sourcing. And so, again, this is on you, the buyer's shoulders from the start. To an extent, are you sourcing an appropriate supplier? There's more to consider than just can they do the job? That's an important one for sure. But, there are other factors such as, what's the state of their business? Do they exhibit any red flags that could suggest that they might try and play games? Maybe it's not even quality fade, but there are other bad behaviors that suppliers can end up doing, and we want to try and, find those during the sourcing phase. So are we sourcing them diligently? And that's another topic altogether, which we have covered, by the way. So check the show notes. But yeah, like, it again,
it kind of works both ways, doesn't it? Quality fade, the supplier should not be playing games. But on the other hand, you as the buyer, you need to make your requirements extremely clear and you need to stay on top of them.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and pick the right supplier. Don't go with a supplier that will just give you the lowest price. Try to save a few pennies, and maybe they're doing it at a loss, but then they will make it up on your, behind your back. That's really not what you want.
Yeah, they have to, but of course, that's not going to do you any favors. Yeah, absolutely. No, completely agree. So, quality fade, definitely something that we want to avoid. A terrible situation for importers. And that's given a good overview of it. And I think the examples as well, and some of the tips on how to avoid, that's going to be a helpful takeaway for the listeners. So, if you are listening, you've got any questions about this topic or any others, do get in touch with us at Sofeast. And I'll beat you to it, Renaud. If you're enjoying the podcast, drop us a 5-star review. Thanks for listening. And Renaud, thanks for being with us today.
Right. All right. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Sofeast Group. We're on a mission to provide you with everything you need to manufacture effectively in Asia, including inspections, auditing, new product development support, contract manufacturing, 3PL warehousing and fulfillment, and much, much more across Asia's key manufacturing areas. Visit us at sofeast.com. That's SOFEAST.com to learn more and get help. If you've enjoyed the podcast today, please do rate, review, and share because it will really help others discover us too.